Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, you're back in the IGN UK podcast zone. We're always here, sitting, waiting, willing you to come back week after week. It's Cardi with me.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you sound great.
Yeah, I'm not 100%.
Well, we've got an email about that later on.
Yeah, let's...
Really?
Yes. Matt, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you.
Great, I'm Joe, just in case you didn't know. It's the best three you could possibly have. Oh, I'm Dale's just waiting to see whether Dale's angry or he agrees. We're going to start by talking about a brand new Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker trailer. Because you got to have an opinion, unless you're like Alex and you don't want one.
Yeah,
purposely. Some people. Opinionless.
Well, I am with some of those people that I love a good trailer, so I watch them. But I'm some of those people who don't want to know anything, want to go in blind.
Well, I also think Star Wars trailers, in particular, in recent years, are very good at hiding what the film is about.
And
personally,
misdirecting.
Yes, but if you, like Alex, don't want to hear anything about Star Wars new trailer, you can skip. We're going to do this for exactly 7 minutes. We're on a timer. So if you skip
just
to exactly...
Just the Star Wars section, not the whole podcast. Yeah. It will be longer than 7 minutes.
Just. I'll say 3, 2, 1, go. And on go, you can skip forward exactly 7 minutes and we'll be wrapping up. Promise. All right? So 3, 2, 1, Star Wars! Right. What you boys think?
I think it looks amazing.
I think it looks brilliant.
I'm well up for it. I can't wait. It's only 2 months away.
Yeah.
We've got our tickets.
We have.
Yeah, already bought them.
Day one, baby.
9:30 in the morning. That's early for me. I mean, I start work at that time every day.
Well, you get in late every day.
I get in 9:30 on the dot. That's not late. Everyone else is early by 15.
I will be pointing out every time
you
you're
don't
not on the dot.
Arrive, though, to a John Williams score.
No, but absolutely I should. Not. In my own head, I do.
So what Last Jedi feelings?
So when I initially saw it, really didn't like it. Yeah. Watched it for a second time 2 weeks later, really liked it.
You're the same as Alex.
I really liked it, didn't love it, and I'm still in that boat. I think there are a couple of problems with it, but I do really like it.
Yeah. I've still only seen it once, but I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. So basically what I'm interested in is how far this runs with it. And it does look as though, at least like the clips we're seeing, it feels quite separate. Like we're not seeing at the moment, like, here is the precise run on from what you finished The Last Jedi knowing.
No.
It feels like very disparate, like scattershot.
Yeah, I think they're gonna have that time jump, especially with Rey's training. I think we're gonna turn up at the start of this film, little montage, and she'll be proper powerful.
That'd be kinda cool.
Yeah. And I feel like they're sharing The Force Awakens was... I really enjoy The Force Awakens, but I do think it was safe.
Yes.
Even in the way it was shot, I think it's quite safe, whereas The Last Jedi, some of those shots don't normally belong in a Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. They've some incredible-looking cinematography, and even in this trailer, there's echoes of that, I think, already.
Well, what I really like about this is that it has... I'm a proper Return of the Jedi apologist. I think that's actually the best of the original trilogy, personally.
It was when I was a kid. I still love
like
it.
Like, the Ewok stuff notwithstanding, there's the best action and all the best,
it's
like...
the green lightsaber.
...come up and stuff, huh?
The green lightsaber makes everything
so better. So much good shit in that. And I have echoes of that feeling of, like, you get those... moments where you're like, this is proper nerd fantasy, where it's like all the ships and all the stuff.
Yeah, like that looks like it'll be the big end battle similar to Jedi when those horse things are riding on a Star Destroyer.
I'm well into... So I... Basically, the stuff that I don't like in Last Jedi is the stuff that was at the casino, because I think all of Finn's stuff is rubbish.
Yeah, he's basically...
And I wasn't into the racing dogs sort of stuff. But seeing them on horses charging what looks like almost like on the surface of a Star Destroyer, it's got... It's where Lord of the Rings meets sci-fi, right? And that is exactly the sort of things I like from Star Wars, when you get that... It's a science fantasy. Yeah. And that feeling of anything that's got a cavalry charge is something that I love. Yeah. And, like, we haven't had that in Star Wars, really. So. Yeah.
And I know it's this is good. This is the longest Star Wars film by, I think, 2 minutes.
Is it?
It's 2.5 hours long. But it's still, even from that trailer, it looks like they've got a lot to fit in.
Yeah. Well, what I like is that all Star Wars trailers, by dint of not giving anything away, are now basically tone poems where people just go, I'm sad, but not for long. Yeah. Goodbye, Force, and stuff. And then you get this one bit with C-3PO where it becomes very clear what's going on, or what appears to be going on.
Yeah.
And it's made everyone on the internet cry, despite it being fucking Anthony Daniels saying something, which seems like an impossibility. The idea that he could ever elicit emotion is insane.
I know, right? And genuinely, so like watching it, I've had a lump in my throat. Like, the first time I watched it, I was on the point of almost tearing up. And sort of, like, it reminds me more in that way of, sort of, like, the Last Jedi trailer I thought was really entertaining, but when I saw the Force Awakens trailer, that was something. And this, it obviously has the nostalgia element of it, because it is so close to feeling like traditional Star Wars. But also, it's like, you know that this is... I know that there's going to be lots more Star Wars films in the future, but this is the last of these ones. You know, the Skywalker saga is about to end.
Maybe. That's,
well, I hope that that's the thing that they pull through on this.
Yeah. The version of the theme they use at the end of that trailer is amazing. I love it. I want that in my ears all the time.
It is very good. Does it... You were saying, because you love the Rogue One piano.
The Imperial March, which they did for the Rogue One trailer. And it's a shame that they never used that in Rogue One, because I find that... Because I quite like Rogue One, but what it doesn't have is, it's got a unique shooting style. It doesn't have a unique orchestral style. And I wish that these films were a little bit different from the classic John Williams. I know why, but to have this version of it being that soundtrack, you know, that proper, this is the end.
Yeah.
That would be lovely.
There's a lot of great stuff in that trailer, but like, one thing we haven't seen, which they... I think they briefly showed in the last trailer, was the Knights of Ren, and I thought they might actually feature, but I'm starting to think they maybe are just this slightly inconsequential backstory and not a proper thing.
Maybe.
Like, I'm now reversing my whole theory of Rey being a former Knight of Ren. Still could happen.
I do like that theory, though.
I think that's... it should cool happen. But I do like whatever's going on here. It looks like, I think anyway, it looks like that one shot where it looks like Kylo Ren and Rey are working together. It looks like they're destroying Vader's helmet.
Well, they're destroying something that's holding up Vader's helmet. Like, it seems very clear that that is, to me. But whether it's... Obviously, the last one got a bit sort of hooky-kooky, mind palace business.
Well, like, especially in The Last Jedi, they are working together for one scene, but by the end of it, he is telling her to kill him. He is telling them to kill her again, basically.
Yeah.
So they're back to... That was my main problem with Last Jedi, is I thought it was really entertaining, but ultimately... I thought everyone's character situation was pretty much the same as when the film started.
And
there wasn't
also
much growth. Apart from Rey becoming stronger, there wasn't much growth for anyone else.
Yeah, I mean...
Especially the Finn stuff, and Poe Dameron, not really.
Finn is hugely underserved, and I think that's a massive shame, because I love Finn, and I don't think he gets a lot of good stuff aside. His stuff with Rose could have been interesting. I don't think it pays off. I have a lot of faith in J.J. Abrams. I think he's a very good filmmaker, and I feel like they'll pull it back. I think he's going to have something great.
Well, it is confusing to me that Finn's, like, just fine in this. You're like, what's the point then?
So I thought that would have been at the end of Last Jedi. I thought that would be a great moment for him sacrificing, because that gives him an arc and a purpose.
Yeah.
but they bottled it in my eyes.
Or maybe he just dies now.
Maybe he does.
Him and 3PO die hugging.
Ooh.
Mm. Oh, no, 3PO's getting red eyes.
When's Phasma coming back?
She ain't.
She didn't get a good end.
They destroyed it. We've got 10 seconds to fill, boys.
Palpatine's back, isn't he?
Ooh.
Is he a ghost or a mech? Ghost or mech?
Ghost.
Ghost.
I'm going ghost mech.
And that is it. Welcome back, you boring bastards.
Wow.
Just watch trailers. It's fine.
Is the Force not with you?
Clearly not. No. From one interplanetary delight to, I don't know, maybe another, Outer Worlds. You played some of it.
Yeah, I'm several hours in now.
You're the only one of us that has it.
Yeah.
Greedy fuck.
Sorry.
Goodness. Well, that silenced him now. You've made him feel bad.
I'm sorry. Yes. I'm so sorry.
I can send an email.
No, I'm going to apologise. Just because I'm not feeling 100% well doesn't mean I should make others feel
absolutely not.
And, yeah, apologise.
All right, could you talk about Outer Worlds?
Yeah, no worries. I'll get over this. So, Outer Worlds, do you like Fallout?
Yeah. I do.
Yeah, it's the same game.
Okay, sweet.
But...
Well, right, yeah. So,
did you enjoy Fallout 4? Because some people didn't.
I do like it. I think Fallout 4 is the better one that Bethesda have done. I know some people think 3 is the better one. For me, it was 4. Better,
but I tried to go back to 3 maybe a year ago. That game looked much better in my head.
It's a game of its time.
It is very murky. So. Yeah.
Well, obviously, this is not made by Bethesda. This is made by Obsidian, who made Fallout New Vegas, which is my favourite Fallout game. So the interesting thing is I had a very different opinion to The Outer Worlds in my first 2 hours of it than I have now, and I'm about 9 hours into it. And I found it very, very difficult for those first 2 hours to get over the fact that it is for... 90% of its DNA, it's just Fallout. The presentation of the game is almost entirely Fallout. The way that menus operate are so similar. Like the wait menu
character model, they all look like Fallout characters.
Yeah, sort of like when you go to a computer terminal, it does that thing where it locks you into the computer you interact, and even it sounds very similar when you're tapping through it. When you have a conversation with a person, the dialogue tree system is almost identical, and combat feels... It's got no VATS. You have a slow down time mechanic instead. Yeah. But that feels like it's there because you can't put a trademark and a copyright on first-person shooter mechanics, but you can on VATS. Mm. So they just found something out. But even the way the camera moves feels like... The way your character and camera moves is identical in feeling. And so for those first 2 hours, it's a bit like... I think of a lot of Obsidian. I like them as a development house. And it's like, why are you just making a game that Bethesda invented? I get when you made New Vegas where you do this, because they had 18 months, I think, to build New Vegas. And it made sense. It had to fit in with that lineage of games. They're now free to do what they want. And yet they made Fallout again. And that was a little bit confusing. And then I started thinking about what other things they'd done. And obviously they've done Pillars of Eternity. It's just Baldur's Gate. It's just a game that everybody on that team used to make 20 years ago, and they made it again with nicer graphics. And so that's the thing, this is Fallout with nicer graphics. It has better animation, the world looks nicer because it's still a retro 50s 60s style
it's
future,
got sort of like a Borderlands kind of
counterculture,
yeah,
slightly, I would say, slightly nauseating approach to anti-capitalism while not actually saying anything.
Is the gunplay better than a Fallout game?
No.
Because that's always... It's
a Fallout game.
That's a shame, because it kind of has... Mm-hmm. That's what I always wish, if you could have how a Borderlands game feels in the world of the Outer Worlds, and that is kind of the combination of the both of those, I think, to make a brilliant game.
No, not a shooter in the slightest. It is an RPG first and foremost. It just happens that you shoot things with very little feedback.
Does dialogue have more... So Fallout games, dialogue does matter, but can you actually get... You can never really circumvent whole situations through talking and whole missions.
So here
we go. End up killing someone.
New Vegas, you could.
You can, yeah.
Yeah. So this is where I start to suddenly get into it, because sort of 2 hours in, you get over the fact that you're kind of like, oh, I'm just playing a very, very similar game. And then you start to see the nuances and the things that make an Obsidian game an Obsidian game. And a lot of that is to do with dialogue and writing. I think it is, if we were to unofficially include it in the canon, it is now the best written Fallout game that there ever has been. I think it's got
better than 1 and 2. People are going to be furious with you for
two
that.
Is very well written. I'll give it that. Like two is very funny, and this is very Fallout 2, whereas Fallout 1 is the Fallout 3 vibe. It's very grim and grisly. Two is when they were just like, fucking let's go mad and be Monty Python. This isn't quite as bonkers as that, but it has that kind of, you know, sticking its tongue out a lot of the time. But it very quickly introduces like your first major choice, which I'm not going to spoil that for anybody, but it's one of those choices where you think you're so enlightened to the choice that you make that for me, knowing what my character that I'm role-playing is, I was like, I know what choice I'm going to make. And then realized that maybe I definitely didn't have all the information that I would have liked and was like, oh shit, I'm an awful person. And it's those things that when the consequences of your actions come up on you sort of like 20 minutes later, I like games that do that. You know, The Witcher is very, I mean, The Witcher sometimes doesn't give you a consequence until like 4 hours later. Yeah,
that's what Disco Elysium's all about.
Yeah, exactly. And so it does that very, very well. And there was a part of that first choice that was a bit like, I was playing that just as the Extinction Rebellion stuff was going on. I was like, ooh, there's a bit of topicalness to this. Like, obviously not intended, because I'm sure nobody in the US at Obsidian knows about Extinction Rebellion. But
it's a global movement.
Is it global? I thought it was slightly more British.
It's our whole planet that's under threat.
Well, I know it is the whole planet, as all the planets are in the Outer Worlds, because basically the whole idea is they're all owned by corporations, and me obviously as a horrendous anti-capitalist is trying to go around and dismantle this. Not going so well for me, but as it would. But it's got lots of funny elements to it where kind of like one of the quests that you're on involves someone having committed suicide. That's illegal on this planet because obviously that's company vandalism, because you've just destroyed an item of property. So there's lots of that, and you know, I think you're right, Joe, in that some of it is a bit cheap shot. It's very easy to do that. You know, it's just poking fun at Jeff Bezos, isn't it?
Yeah.
But without saying. But it is nicely written, and it's got, whereas Fallout obviously is very kind of post-nuclear, that sort of 1950s style comedy, this, I think, draws a lot more from Firefly. Like, it's got that kind of ramshackle, because you have a little ship, and that's where I think I'm starting to see more big differences now. It's not a big open world like Fallout is. It's lots of discrete, smaller items across a galaxy map, and you've got this little ramshackle ship that you can fly between them, and, like, you can only get to places when you've got, like, docking keys to get there. So there's more of a Mass Effect vibe to maybe how that works, and you also have two companions instead of one with you all the time. So that gives you a little bit more of that BioWare element, but it's still very much through the lens of a Bethesda-style game.
I think you could say, like, well, this is just cheap, it's a rip-off, but I think the opposite. I think they've just been very smart, especially the way Bethesda's games have been going the last year or two, where they haven't been doing great.
Well, yeah.
Especially Fallout 76 and the news this week of the madness of what they're doing with that
game. There was
game.
An excellent conspiracy theory going around yesterday that they dropped that early to overshadow Outer Worlds,
which they like, won't, because this is the significantly better game.
But
the idea almost, it's like, this is why it's a conspiracy theory, because the idea is almost not, oh, we're dropping our good news at the same time and something good comes out. It's, this will be a massive news story and will cover up people talking about our competitor, which I don't think is the case, but it is fucking brilliant. That's old school conspiracy theories.
Yeah. I do want to give it a go, but I fear it's going to be one of those games that there's a couple of games coming out soon that I really want to play, and that one might just get lost for me.
It is one of those things, like RPGs are probably my favourite genre, and now I'm into Outer Worlds, I do feel like I quite like to see it through. Also, it's not, watching videos with Obsidian, I don't think it's actually a very big RPG. Like, all the zones are quite small anyway, because it's, when you land on a planet, you get a small,
about 30 hours, so it's not epic.
It's like dense rather than broad.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that. And also, I like that they've stated that they don't ever really want, if they can make this a franchise, that's what they want to stick with. Like, they like the idea of this being, they know that they can obviously get a lot more money from Microsoft, but I was watching an interview they were doing with Game Informer where they were like, we like the idea of, like, we would like more budget to make it look nicer and make our systems work better, but we like the idea that this is a smaller, denser RPG. Yeah. And those don't exist so much now. Like, people are very desperate to make lots of big Witcher-style RPGs.
Yeah.
And so I like this, and I do feel like now I've got into it, and, you know, I'm starting to build some bonds with characters, I think I'm going to see it through. It is one of those that I think will be the one that's quite easily put to the back and maybe come back to in January, though. So if you love Fallout, if you want basically what appears to be a better version of Fallout on half the budget,
yeah.
despite the fact it doesn't look like that.
It's on Game Pass as well, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So if you're an Xbox or a PC person, then you literally barely have to pay for it. Yeah.
Feels Christmassy to me. Mm. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Mm. Right, next. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Watchmen. I haven't seen it, so I'm assuming that's the theme tune to Watchmen.
No.
What is the theme tune to
it? It's Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross scored, oh. so you know it's going to be good.
Yeah, but is there a theme tune?
They haven't put it in the first episode.
The first episode didn't have a title sequence.
Fuck.
There's got to be one, though. Yeah. When's the last time an HBO show didn't have a good title sequence?
That's a good shout. I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't watched them all. But Succession is obviously top tier.
It's the greatest.
I think it's too early to say it's the greatest, but it's up there.
It's the greatest title sequence.
Okay.
Carry on.
Watchmen, though. We're not going to spoil anything for Watchmen, so don't worry if you haven't seen it. Joe hasn't seen it, so we're definitely not going to spoil it. But we just thought we'd give brief feelings. I really, really, really liked it.
Triple really.
Triple really.
A triple R.
I know it's not the site we gave it a 6, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I know some people aren't as into it as I am. But I really like what they're setting up. It's very dark. It's what I wanted it to be, which it does remind me of the comic a lot.
Mm-hmm. And it is a sequel to the comic, isn't it?
It's a sequel to the book, yeah. But, I mean, the book and the film are 80%, 90% similar anyway. It's just the ending that's different. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if ultimately that's going to make too much difference to this series, but there's definitely there's one or two little funny jokes that you won't get unless you know how the book ends.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen some people in our Facebook group discussing about whether the people that they're watching with can just watch the film or they need to watch the comic. Mm-hmm. And as you say, they're 80% similar. But that difference, there is certainly there's one major scene in this episode that you do need to know how the 20-year-old book that I'm now not going to spoil for anyone because you might actually want to read it fresh. But yeah, I agree with you broadly. I think it's a great start. I would not have given it the 6 that our entertainment team gave it. I need to watch a few more episodes yet. I think it either has the biggest brass balls imaginable for a comic book
I think it might do.
Show, or it's a woeful misreading of the current political climate. But I'm leaning towards the fact that it's ballsy.
I think it's definitely leaning that way. Mm-hmm. And especially the interrogation scene that happens about halfway through. It's got some quite big Blade Runner vibes to it, which is what I'm enjoying as well.
Yeah, yeah. But Blade Runner in the grit and the grime rather than the lights
it's
and
almost,
the neons.
It's almost, like if Blade Runner took place in Gotham.
Yeah, yeah, very much. And the thing I like about it is, because obviously, not to dig too much into the Watchmen mythology for anybody who doesn't properly know it, but obviously, we do know that in that era that the government had outlawed vigilantes, so they're not superheroes because it's not an era, it's not a world of superheroes. And we are starting to see people, working alongside the police that don't appear to be wearing police uniforms. And my questions there are so do people that want to be vigilantes, are they allowed to just work alongside the police? Yeah. Or do police that don't want to wear officer uniforms just get to wear their vigilante outfits? Because there's the blurring of the lines, right? And that's always a question that Watchmen has had, is what is the difference between a vigilante and a policeman? Mm. And there's a lot of interesting stuff there. The stuff about, obviously, the police here have a big issue with the idea that they're being shot at. And that's where I sort of I need to see a few more episodes to know where they're going with that. Because obviously, police shootings and police being shot at is a big hot button topic in America at the moment. Mm-hmm. And there are certain ways that this deals with it. I'm just a bit I'll give you the benefit of the doubt for now. And I think that they'll go the right way just because the bad team in this are definitely bad people.
Yeah.
Using elements.
Definitely a lot of grey area. Well, not with that particular bunch that you're talking about. There's no grey area there.
If anybody knows what the Rorschach mask looks like, there is a distinct reason why it is black and white and the colours don't bleed together. Because that character has no sense of grey. He is there are bad things and there are good things, and he was pretty much a Nazi. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the rest, and yeah, I'm hopeful because we've got that, and then this weekend we've got His Dark Materials.
Yeah.
It's a big week for HBO.
Oh, yeah. I forget that's HBO because it's always advertised as BBC, over here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But do we get that the same? Is that on Sunday night here or do we get that on Monday night?
I don't know. I just know that it's Actually, I don't think it's this week. I don't think it's the really? Week after. It's like November 3rd, I think.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong. But it's very soon.
Yeah.
And that'll obviously... it's not the lightest of tales, but it's definitely more...
I mean, there's lots of kids in very perilous situations.
Exactly. But
there's also Lin-Manuel Miranda in a hot air balloon.
Yeah.
Safely say it's lighter subject matter than Watchmen.
Oh, definitely.
But yeah, it's looking good.
I'm into it. How many episodes are going to be?
I imagine it'd be 10.
It's usually 10
for
HBO,
yeah. Isn't it?
That's 10 big old episodes, isn't it?
Hour long. But it's the Succession replacement, the Succession successor.
I know, it's annoying because I just cancelled my Now TV
thing.
I rushed to finish Succession, cancelled it, and fucking watched it.
I've got 3 episodes of Succession left, so I'm bobbling up.
I still haven't started it.
It's good. It's real good.
Fuck off.
God damn it. If you haven't seen the Twitter video that someone made where they play every character in Succession, but they're all asking for some of their dad's M&Ms. Oh my God.
It's probably worse than you if you haven't seen the program.
Oh yeah, it'd be awful if you haven't seen the program. But if you have, some of those impressions are dead on.
Oh, so good.
Kieran Culkin shrugging. There's nothing like it. That guy's got some square ass shoulders. Anyway, Matt, you're up. You've also seen Terminator, the
Dark
new one.
Fate.
Yeah. Which you seem pretty good on.
You're quite a big Terminator fan.
I do like. Well, we say I'm a Terminator
fan.
You
told me that Salvation's maybe the best film you've ever seen.
I fucking didn't, mate. I don't like Salvation, I'm afraid. I think it's probably actually the better one out of the three that we've had in between two and this one. But this one is the best Terminator film. And the interesting thing
is Terminator.
So it's the best Terminator film since two.
Gonna say steady on.
No, the thing is kind of like to say it's the best Terminator film since T2 is not really all that much praise.
No.
I think it deserves more than that. The more time I think about it, I think it's one of those films that if you start to pick it apart, it really falls apart. So please read it more at a surface level to get your maximum enjoyment out of it. But what we have here is so Tim Miller, who's the director of Deadpool, has returned, well, I say returned, he's come to the franchise. James Cameron has returned, because obviously, I think they've realised now that you can't make a Terminator film without James Cameron.
It's almost like he's good at making films.
Or at least that James Cameron will be so angry at people for doing bad shit that it won't get made if it's rubbish.
Yeah. He does like money, though, as well.
He loves a bit of money, because it all goes in his submarines.
Yeah. And to the 4 Avatar films currently in production.
Yeah, that's sub money.
So Cameron is an exec producer on this, and I think basically what has happened is he's been on his little submarine and they've been sending him emails and, you know, rushes and stuff like that so he can oversee it and make sure it is going... I think the reason why it feels like a James Cameron film is because it's Terminator 2. Like, that's both its strength and its undoing, really, is the fact that what we have here is Sarah Connor's obviously back, but the idea of it is she's not the person in peril in this film. There is a new character called Danny, who you probably have seen in the trailers, and she's the person that's been hunted by the Rev-9, which is the new T-1000, for lack of a
better word. Has it got T at the front of its name anymore?
No, it's a Rev-9.
Who's naming these things?
I don't know.
Why do the machines need to call things different things?
Well, yeah. I mean, there might... Now, I can theorise that there might be a reason why it's the Rev-9 instead of the T, you know, 9000 or something like that. But that would be picking apart a film that, as I say, I think is quite surface. And this is where its undoing is like it uses a lot of the beats of Terminator 2. So you've got a girl that has been hunted by an evil Terminator, and a character also comes back from the future to protect Danny, which is Mackenzie Davis's Grace.
I thought you were going to say Mackenzie Crook. I was really excited.
He'd be great. They could do like a riff back to, you know, his eye.
Yeah, I was going to say playing his wonky-eyed pirate. Oh, come on. I got to go over here. I've got long arms. See you later.
He was in the Territorials.
In the Territorials. He's got the skills.
He was also, was it the Detectorists he was in?
Yeah.
Could have used his metal detector to find out where the Rev-9 was.
Is he made of metal? Definitely. Because sometimes there could it be detectable metal?
Melty steel boys, aren't they?
So, because he's like half T-800 because he's got like a metal skeleton, but he's then got like he's covered in T-1000, so it can sort of like split away from the. It's very goopy.
He's like a reverse Terminator Twinkie.
Maybe that's why he's a Rev 9. Reverse Terminator.
Oh, shit.
You've worked it out. We've got to the bottom of this.
We got you, cameras.
Do you think that they've looked at why people like The Force Awakens and gone, they basically liked that film.
Exactly.
Let's do it again.
So this is the thing, is it knows what people like. They like Sarah Connor. They like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. They like the story of Terminator 2. If we just do that, yeah, but have a slightly different set of cast members.
Is there by any chance an action-packed sequence on a highway?
Yes.
It's The Matrix Reloaded.
I think so. All of that works, and it's really well directed. Like, it has that, you know how Mission Impossible Fallout, you know the sequence where they're fighting in the toilet block?
Yeah.
And you know how you can hear the sound of those blows. There is a fight scene between Grace and the Rev9 in this where it's got that. Like, you can fucking hear, like, she's a cybernetically powered woman, and you can feel, like, the sound of her fists pounding into this horrendous, gloopy robot man.
That's cool.
So that's very, very cool.
Imagine what that sounds like.
And you know, there's good gunfights, and like, action wise, it's Tim Miller. You'd expect that, yeah, from him, right?
Tim Miller is emerging as quite a competent director.
Has he got, like, some of the comedy he brings from Deadpool? Not that I think Deadpool's a hilarious film personally.
No, but it obviously has one liners because you can't make an Arnold Schwarzenegger film without them.
No, it's he can only say one line at a time. So
yeah, but it's not a Deadpool. It's not even remotely there. I know it's literally called Dark Fate, but it does lean into that. You know, it takes itself seriously. I think where it all starts to fall apart, which I don't think The Force Awakens does, is when you look further under the surface of kind of all of these things that you recognize, you're like, well, why does this happen? You know, kind of like, why is the emphasis no longer on Sarah Connor? Why is it on this woman? And you're like, okay, so, you know, this is set after they prevent Judgment Day. So why are there still Terminators? And there are broadly answers to these kind of things, but they're not particularly well thought through. So it's like, this is why you just can't question it. You just have to go along with it. And, you know, that means that I probably wouldn't score it as high as we have on the site. But I do think it's a very entertaining watch.
It's the first Terminator film in a long time you can safely recommend to someone.
Yeah,
to watch.
I can say it's a decent film. What it isn't is a decent sequel to T2, because it can't carry on some of the ideas. But as a Terminator film, on the surface, it works very well, and it's not like when you watch, like, Genesis is so all over the place. And I actually find Genesis somewhat entertaining because of that. It is a mess that is, you can glue yourself to it because it's so entertaining in its horrendous awfulness. Whereas this doesn't have that. It's just a well put together action film. It's just its lore and its logic doesn't always make a lot of sense.
I hear you've been speaking to some people.
What?
That's animal thread.
Why have you taken
about me?
Why have you taken my hosting duties and fucked out?
You were looking at your phone.
I've got a million messages because people are saying mad bullshit.
Oh no, not what? Again. Anyway.
Yes.
So you've been speaking to a couple of people in this film.
Yes, so just after I went to see it, we did a junket. You might have seen a little bit of that junket on our YouTube channel, on our main homepage, because I didn't have to ask him at all. He just started saying one-liners, you know, because that's what he does, apparently. He's like Woody, if you pull the pull string on the back. He's just got 101 different lines he can say.
I would buy an Arnold Schwarzenegger action figure that just had 100 different lines in it.
Yeah. But so we've obviously got that out there, but we thought you'd like to hear everything both Arnold Schwarzenegger and Linda Hamilton had to say. So here's my interview with them. So my first question is basically, this feels like the genuine, true sequel to Terminator 2, right? Even though there have been other Terminator films, this one is the true sequel, right?
Yes. That was our intention.
Mm-hmm. And I think, personally for me, when I was watching it, the way that felt is sort of like a lot of the story sort of almost has parallels to T2, sort of like there's almost a new Sarah Connor in Dina, there's a new kind of T-800, sort of, I suppose, in Grace, there's a new T-1000 in this incredible sort of sophisticated Rev-9 machine. Was it kind of like intentional to run those parallels?
Well, that is something you would have to ask Jim Cameron or the director, who were, both of them were involved in creating the story and writing the story. So I don't know what they, if it was intentional or not. But for us, it was really great that there was kind of like a film that was written as a kind of like a sequel. And I was very happy that Linda came back. So when Jim told me, when Jim Cameron told me the story and then said to me, he says, and we're going to bring Linda back. I said, yes. And I was very excited about it.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to step back into Sarah Connor's role? You know, because obviously, Arnie, you've been able to be a T-800 a few more times. This is the first time for a while, right?
Many long years. Yeah. It's not like riding a bike, I tell you. I mean, plus, it's Sarah Connor, but it's Sarah Connor all these years later. And I had to figure out what my strengths are as a woman of a certain age, and to be careful to not just ape what I had done all those years ago. You know, we want to see something new. We don't want to see the same old, which is why I had resisted doing it all these years. But then I thought, I've got something to bring to the table now. Let's see what we've got.
Mm-hmm. I suppose when T2 came out, sort of like you were a trailblazer for what has eventually become sort of like strong central female performances. And do you kind of feel sort of like that, A, you were ahead of your time at that point, and B, sort of like what you're able to bring to almost like as a veteran of that?
Well, it's great that people assigned me that title of the trailblazer. You know, certainly didn't think about it that way while I was doing it. But I'll take it. And so now it's just, you know, I mean, I might have been one of the original badasses. Now I'm like an old woman kicking ass. So it's like a whole new title. We'll see. But, you know, happy to go along with whatever as long as I get work like this.
I definitely think that she created a whole new standard there. In 1984, in 1991, when the second one came out, and now also, because I think that she's a real badass in this movie, and she makes it totally believable at her age, and I think also because she prepped really well. I mean, she did months and months and months of training, and training with the weapons, and doing the physicality, and the stunts, and all this kind of stuff. So she just put the work in it. That's the key thing, because then you can make it believable.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, Arnold, you get to come back and play a T-800 again, but you're not playing the same T-800 because obviously we smelted him at the end of T2. So sort of like, what did you have to think about when taking on a new version of that character?
Well, you know, I'm kind of used to it because in each one of the Terminators, I think he's programmed a little differently. And so in the first one, I just was crushing things and I just was wiping out and going after her, trying to kill her. And in the second one, I was programmed to be the protector and to help them with the mission. And so each one is different. And this one, of course, what made it to me very attractive was that now was here is a T-800 that has lived with human beings for quite some time. And he has now adopted human behaviors. And so now there's this question, at what point is this kind of his own conscience and his own human knowledge overriding the machine and the programming and so on. And so that's what we're dealing with in this. So it becomes a great suspense in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Aside from obviously having both of you back, James Cameron is back, and obviously he's considered a massively important part of Terminator.
A little bit.
What was it like to work with him again?
Well, it's always a lot of fun, but it's also very intense. Because Jim has, you know, kind of split personalities. He's kind of can be very sweet one minute, but then when he gets to work and work on something, he becomes a totally different person. It's almost not recognizable. And so he then changes personality. So you have to deal with both of those personalities at all times.
Mm-hmm. Arnold, you've obviously worked on several Terminator projects without him, so I was wondering if you could sort of explain, what is it that you think Jim brings to the Terminator that is so important?
I think that the one thing that is important is that he is the one that created the character. He's the one that created the original story. He wrote then the second one, which was became the biggest movie of the year when it came out. And so, and it's a very character that is written that made me be amongst the 10 top heroes in the movie history and one of the top 10 top villains. So he wrote it that way. So this is his creation. So of course, when he's then involved in something down the line, like this one is now number 6, and he comes up with a concept and with the story that has certain depth to it and believability, and then also the whole idea of bringing Linda back, I thought was brilliant. You know, so I think he has just great ideas.
Mm-hmm. When Jim came to you, how did that feel?
It was a big surprise. I sure didn't see it coming. Like, you know, I used to joke, you know, yeah, geriatric Sarah Connor. Like, you know, you don't really think that the Hollywood is not primed to have a leading lady my age, much less an action adventure star of a film my age. So that was a surprise. But I was intrigued because I know that he is the driving force and the sort of genius behind this franchise. And if Jim saw it, then maybe I could see it. So I had to give it some thought. But it's really Jim, isn't it?
Yeah. Obviously, Terminator Dark Fate, I think it almost is called Dark Fate because there is an element of darkness to the film, even though it's quite fun. It takes its subject matter really seriously. But obviously, these films, as well as other films that you've been in, Arnold, are well known for the one-liners. You get a fantastic one very early in the film. Do you think those one-liners are kind of important for balancing the films?
Hollywood does. I've always sort of thought, not sure that I love that. You know, you do want to be able to release tension in the audience when you're just like, and then it's a great release. But I'm not always the biggest fan of that because it might pull you out of, you know, the serious moments. But I definitely gave over to it this time, just, you know, and really enjoyed Arnold and what his comedy is fantastic.
Thank you.
Really fantastic.
I have to say, I live off one-liners. I think one-liners were written for me in my whole career. It was always kind of like, you know, because I always felt like I can deliver it. And the way I say things, it like makes a normal line kind of comedic, right? Like, get to the chopper. I mean, why would that be funny?
But
I
mean, it's only funny somehow, when
just
you
the
say
way
it.
I say chopper, right? So it's like, yeah, exactly. So that's what makes it then funny. Or saying to a bunch of kids in Kindergarten Cop, it's not a tumor. It's not a tumor at all. You know, so the way I say tumor made the kids laugh, and therefore it became funny then in the audience also.
Do you have a favorite one that you've ever delivered?
You know, my favorite of all time, you mean? Or in this movie?
Just in this movie.
In this movie.
All time.
I don't want to give any lines away from this movie. But I mean, of all time, I think obviously the I'll Be Back and the Hasta La Vista Baby, or Get to the Chopper. One of my favorites still is when I put the knife into the guy's chest through his heart, pinned him in the pole, and I said, stick around. You know, so things like that. I mean, it's the combination of what you see and the way you say it then.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. You've been wonderful to talk to. It's
great.
Wow.
Arnold seems nice, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It was a much nicer, like, it's easy to go into that room and feel threatened for two reasons. It's like, A, he's a big, no, not quite as big as he was before, but a fairly muscular, imposing dude. And B, like, those two are, like, childhood action heroes of mine. Like, that, probably out of all the people I've spoken to now, that's been the one where you walk into the room and a lot of people are quite easy, you know, put you at ease and you sort of, like, just get to have a nice chat with them. This was very much all the way through was like, oh shit, I am in a room with Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Isn't that
this
how
is
you
weird.
Feel right now when you're with me and Joe?
Like, I mean, still, there's still a little bit of starstruck there.
How strong was his handshake?
Was not as strong as you'd expect.
Not as strong as his hug. I would love it if he just went in and hugged Arnie. That'd be great.
How do you think he'd react?
I think he'd get
into it. Do you think he'd love it?
Yeah. He'd be like, whoa!
were you tempted to ask for a picture? Because I've never done it in a junket scenario, all, but that is one where you'd be like, I kind of do want a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It is one of those ones where, like, my dad doesn't really give a shit about what I do for a job, but when I was like, oh, I'm interviewing Arnie, it's like, you what? Well, I think pretty much then, like, the entire family WhatsApp, you know, yeah. texting his brother who's always jealous of him, guess what my son's doing?
That is
I don't believe it.
Right, that's quite enough of Arnie. Let's get some actual superstar business in the Endless Search.
Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it Endless Search?
Who's the superstar?
Me.
Oh.
Joe Scribbles, the superstar of games. This week we got a bit of feedback that just said, from Adam Wrigley, Unscripted is the best game so far. I got two of them and felt clever. And that was all we needed to return to Unscripted, which was 2 weeks ago we played for the first time. It's a game in which I search the Internet Movie Script database, which exists, although it is woefully incomplete, as I discovered to my cost, and put together clues as to what these films are, but never using words that are included in the script.
That is challenging.
A lot of finds.
A lot
control
of thesaurus.com.
A lot of thesaurus.com was involved.
I've not played this yet.
I've tried to make... So, the original... Oh, I've forgotten the man's name who suggested
That's
it to us.
That's your fault, that.
The legend who suggested this game put a lot of hard work into it, but I fear the clues were quite impossible.
Very cryptic.
Except for Adam Wrigley, of course. So I've tried to make it a little bit easier, and the last ones are basically giveaways, hopefully.
Okay.
So you can get some points on the board.
Okay.
But we'll see what happens.
And is there a link?
There is a link.
Ooh.
It's not based on anything to do with this episode. It's just a thing
I thought
of. It's
just tenuous.
Yeah, it's not even tenuous. It's just there's no reason for it to be the link this week.
Okay.
So, you know, good luck. Right. I nearly said the name of the movie. We'll start off. Suspense film.
Oh, Mission Impossible.
Rear Window.
No.
Vertigo.
No.
The Bourne Supremacy.
No.
Who's getting it from that?
Exactly. It's always the first one's always meant to be a wild shot. You might just hit it. No, 80s film, Donnie Darko, the classic. 10 out of 10, Joe Scripps, 2018.
I did once get a keyword count. I think I said this on last time, a keyword countdown, which Gav was just like, oh, man with beard. And I think because of the, maybe they were all linked by being horror films, it was just like John Krasinski, Quiet Place.
Bang. Shame that's not this one. Is it A Quiet Place?
It is. 10 points.
Yes!
You fuck!
As you said that, I was like, what the fuck am I meant to do now?
I'll take it.
That's amazing.
Oh, that's hurt my throat, that.
Well, I'll do the rest of them. Extraterrestrial apocalypse. Youngest youth killed post theft. Horrible birth circumstances. And monster's vision compromised.
Oh,
would you have got it on that, do you reckon?
Yeah, I would have got it by
the birth
the third.
One, I
would have got it by the theft one.
Youngest youth killed post theft.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good, wasn't it?
That was mad.
Right.
You can't write that.
10 points to Cardi right now, Daniel.
10 points.
It's a 2 points
wow.
right.
increment in this one. Don't know why. I just like it. Female issues.
What women want.
No. That's very much a Mel Gibson focused male issues.
How
film.
To lose a guy in 10 days.
No.
No idea.
hip soundtrack choices.
Bridesmaids.
Juno?
Juno is right. 8 out of 10. Nice. This is a good game, guys.
Soundtrack to Juno is great.
It is really good.
I really like it.
I'll continue with inappropriate relationship suggested, pro-life protest, and impregnated Ellen Page. Page is technically in it, but I've given myself the rule that if it's used in a different sense, then it's allowed.
Yeah.
Which was also the same for post-theft, because post was used as a different thing.
Oh, is that hyphenated offense anyway? Post.
It is, but that's still two words. That's the point of a hyphen. Connects two words. Doesn't make them one word.
Yeah, but...
we let you write. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
Movie three. Extremely moody ambience.
Seven.
No.
Shutter Island?
No. This is my favourite one. I think I've actually... Oh, no, it's fine. Rich gentleman unravels mind-wise.
Moneyball.
No.
The Big Short. No. Rich man unravels.
Rich gentleman unravels mind-wise. Which I essentially mean mentally.
There'll be blood.
For Wall Street?
There'll be blood. Give it to me.
This is probably the worst one I've written. Grappler patronised a four contest.
Sorry?
It's patronised, not patronised. So as in, there is a patron involved.
Grappler.
Grappler patronised and a four, which also means before.
Yeah.
Contest.
Grappler.
It's like something to do with wrestling.
The wrestler.
That was in the last one. And that's where I got the word grappler from. Prosthetics applied liberally.
Drive?
Where's the prosthetics in Drive?
Oh, he puts on a mask. It's not quite prosthetics, is it?
Thing is now, it's like, is this within the universe of the film, or is this an act?
He doesn't put on prosthetics. Mission Impossible 3.
It's not prosthetic. That's a...
Oh, I know.
Final one?
Yeah.
True Murder.
Zodiac?
True Murder. Foxcatcher.
Foxcatcher.
I've not seen it.
Oh, mate.
Fox.
It's horrible and slow, but it's pretty good.
And spoiled.
Yeah, well, if you know, you know. It's also a true story.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not about it. Right. That's 12 points to 8. All to Plafour.
Plafour. It's all to Plafour.
Well. Film 4. The TV channel. Gross scenes aplenty.
Human centipede.
There's only really one gross scene. There's only a few gross scenes.
Gross scenes. Hard candy. I haven't thought about that film in a long time.
Dental professional loses incisor.
How ironic.
I know.
Teeth?
No.
Oh, that's a teaser, isn't it? Inglourious Bastards?
Mm-mm.
I've got ideas in my head, and I think I know the link. Super.
No. I think you do know the link, though.
No, let's carry on.
Keep going.
Bearded buffoon desires companions.
Little Miss Sunshine?
Mm-mm.
What am I thinking of?
You definitely know the link.
But I think I've already got that one.
Yeah.
A bearded companion.
Bearded buffoon desires companions.
Oh, bearded buffoon. These friends. Don't know.
No clue.
Giant cat drugged.
Garfield?
The Jungle Book? No. Mm-hmm.
Giant cat. The Hangover?
The Hangover.
There we go.
And the final clue, alcohol problems.
Fucker.
So what's that? 4 points.
Is that 12?
12-12.
Oh.
Going into the final straight.
Fucking gave you 10 of them as well.
What was the second film?
The second film.
The one I got was Juno.
Ah, okay.
Hip soundtrack choices was the winning choice. Okay. I haven't written the movie down, but I remember what it is.
Good.
Employing antagonist's skull, sink destroyed.
Super.
No.
Sorry, say that again.
Employing antagonist's skull, sink destroyed.
Casino Royale?
No.
That's what I was going. Sin City?
Mm-mm.
Mission Impossible Fallout?
No. It's weird how many films have sinks been destroyed by heads.
No. Kick-Ass?
No. Burgeoning friendship betwixt idiots.
Dumb and Dumber?
Uh-uh.
Between idiots.
It's betwixt, please. Betwixt. Between is in the script.
Yeah, well, I'm theorising that. I'm trying to think of things. It tends to help. Move on.
Keep going.
Gang warfare interrupted. Capers.
Anchorman.
No. Capers ensue.
Gang warfare interrupted.
Judge Dredd?
No. There's not many capers in Judge Dredd.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Capers.
Funny, aren't they? Capers. Lightly humorous.
Capers. Ugh. I'm trying to think who the fuck could be in this film out of all the people. I just can't think.
No.
Snatch.
No. Doobie sculpted. Mimics crucifix.
Pineapple Express.
That's 4 points.
Oh,
what a big game. I don't remember what you were
that
on.
That was eventful.
12. That's... You were at 16 points. 16 to 12. And the final one was cannabis comedy thriller.
Cannabis isn't in there.
Cannabis is not in there.
They probably call
Sweet
it weed,
Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Weed, marijuana. Do you know what's amazing is when you look through some of those scripts, like, I know this is like a thing, but they're really different. Like the end of Pineapple Express on the page is shite. It's them just walking away from the burning barn.
I know for three of them. Who from... I assume the link is The Office.
It is The Office. Everyone in those was in The Office.
Who in the Pineapple Express and Juno?
Juno is Rainn Wilson. He's the store clerk that sells her birth control.
And Sonny D. Lots of Sonny D.
And it's Craig Robinson in Pineapple Express.
There we go. It is.
He plays...
He does.
Matheson. I think it's Matheson. I love that film.
Good game.
It is a good game. I think you both did very well.
I think that first one happened... In a mad way
that
can
that.
Never be replicated.
That was so good. Is it The Quiet Place? Brilliant. Right, feedback, shall we?
No.
Matt's first. Enjoy yourself.
Oh, look at this. What we got?
I haven't cut these down, so who knows?
Right. Well, this one comes in from Pratik. Hi, all. On last week's podcast, you had feedback on the topic of underappreciated games, and with that, I'd like to suggest Warhawk on PS3. Do you remember Warhawk?
I do
control it with your six
axis. I remember he was... Wasn't he a PlayStation All-Stars character?
Warhawk?
Guy as in, like, the pilot
yeah,
from
Yeah, the
it.
Pilot from... I'm sure he was. Is it Gustav? Am
know.
I making that up?
Not
His name's
a clue.
Gustav?
Shall I look it up?
Been a very long time.
I may be making that up.
I'll carry on. It's one of my favourite games of the last generation, and I played it so much that it caused my PS3 to YLOD, which was Yellow Light of Death, was it?
Yeah.
If you're unfamiliar with it, Warhawk was an online third-person shooter which allowed for battles with up to 32 people where you can fight it out on foot, drive jeeps, tanks, and fly planes all within the same match. And I think a Warhawk was like a specific type of fighter plane in
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it was like a futuristic plane.
Yeah. One of my favourite things about it was that it allowed local split-screen online so that myself and up to three other friends could play split-screen with everyone else online, which is a feature that I wish other games would include. I'd gladly have that if it meant reduced graphics. Anyway, they did a spiritual successor called Starhawk, but it missed a lot of the magic. I'm hoping for a remaster, which I would no doubt buy on day one. Thanks.
I never played it.
I never played Warhawk. Mm-hmm. I remember it coming out and being like, I wish I had a PS3 to play that. Mm-hmm. And one of my mates got obsessed with Starhawk for a short period of time, really? Like really late. And I think he got into it and found out there was still like a really big online, mm-hmm. like dedicated online yeah. community, which sounded quite fun.
Yeah, that stuff about the split screen multiplayer, I used to be able to do that with Halo 3, I think it was. But I don't know if that was, if you could do that with the competitive multiplayer. But I can remember two people in my flat at uni playing split screen co-op and two people from another flat joining with us.
Oh.
And that was really nice. So it was four player, but only on two machines.
That is cool.
That was cool.
Warhawk reminds me of Warframe, which I've been hearing lots of good things about recently, weirdly, because it's been out a long time.
Yeah, it's one of like the... So I don't play it, but I have a lot of admiration for Digital Extremes, because that is a game that started as sort of like effectively a shit corridor shooter and is now like a full-on Destiny MMO.
As far as I can tell, it's like Destiny, isn't it? Yeah, I installed it about 2 months ago mm-hmm. and still haven't started it. I just wanted to check out what
it was
like.
I think it's very complicated to play now. Like, yeah. I can remember sort of in my previous job trying to find people that knew about it to write guides. Mm. And it's like, there are plenty of people that know about it, but they're sat for 2,000 hours a month playing it, therefore yeah. don't want to write about it.
Well, it's like one of those... It's the only gamer service I've seen, maybe barring Eve, but even then not to this level, where... It just regularly changes what the game is.
Oh, yeah, so it's like open, well, not open world, but open environment.
It added an open world area. Mm-hmm. It's adding like, or has recently added full space combat stuff.
Railjack, I think it is, where you get yeah. to, you're on like opposing flying dreadnoughts and you get to like broadside into
it's
each
mad.
Other.
And like
it's
all crazy. These crazy bullshit things. Mm-hmm. It sounds great. Mm-hmm. Like, why aren't more games, well, I guess I know why, because it's yeah. insane, but games, yeah. games of service that just mm-hmm. go, by the way, here's a whole different yeah. game. Yeah. Like, we've been playing the Rainbow Six Halloween thing today.
It's very good.
Which is a really fun Rainbow Six theme, horror-themed version of hide and seek.
Yeah.
And it's like...
it's just hilarious.
I would love that to be in the game the whole time. Just every so often cool yeah. off and have a really quick game of hide and seek.
Because it's a game fundamentally built around shooting, and it's a mode that has no guns.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And it's funny.
I think it's so good.
Was I completely wrong about PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale?
I couldn't find any mention of his name anywhere.
Unbelievable.
You could look it up, but I couldn't, I ain't got my couldn't phone be bothered.
Oh, well.
Feedback 2.
Yeah.
This is aimed... mostly at Cardi.
Oh, God.
I'm
sorry.
He's saying nice thing. I'll read these. They aren't about me.
If they're nice about me, I want to hear them.
Well, we'll get to you. First of all, I just want to say, oh, this is Aidan McCann. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you for all the high-quality work that you do. The podcast is a genuine highlight of my week and has been for me for about 5 years now. I've really enjoyed listening to the different lineups down the years, and I think that Matt and Jesse are both excellent additions to the podcast. Like most listeners... I question this sentiment. I feel that I have a vested interest in the well-being of you boys.
Is this about me now?
Yeah. I don't know if it's my paternal instinct that kicked in with the birth of my son a few months ago. Congratulations. But I am very worried about young Simon Cardi. Jesse, it's just a turn of phrase. I know that you're very young. And then this bit is directed... I'm going to look straight at you while I wake. I was going to move this.
No, don't do that. You might disrupt everything.
Right. Cardi.
Hello.
You seem to be very tired a lot of the time.
I'm a naturally yawny person.
This also seems to affect the quality of your punmanship and ability to segue seamlessly from one topic to another.
Wow.
Have you tried giving yourself a self-imposed curfew? Or using meditation apps like Headspace or Calm so you can get a good night's sleep?
I should go to bed earlier. I'm not into meditation myself.
Too busy playing Apex, aren't we? That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I always aim, like, I'm always in bed at like 12. But then I don't normally get to sleep till like 1, which is a problem.
Yeah, so go to bed earlier. Anyway, reading before bed is always effective.
Do you know what? I used to do that a lot, and I've stopped doing that. I'll admit that I've stopped doing that, and I should be going back to reading more.
Well, how about this? Personally, I like listening to a familiar comedy as I drift off.
Mm.
I find as long as I don't look at a bright screen and just listen, it helps me settle.
Yeah, I get that. Audiobooks are good. I haven't listened to an audiobook in quite a while, but I might start reading again. I've been meaning to get in some graphic novels again. I've never read Court of Owls, so I'm going to read that, the old Batman.
I feel like graphic novels are a good way to not feel annoyed that you fell asleep mid-sentence, because then it's like quite segmented in a way you can, and graphic.
Yeah.
So it lets you know where you were at. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's all from Aidan. Thanks again for quality output. Keep up the good work and look after yourselves, well, Aidan McCann.
Thank you for your concern, Aidan. I'll take the advice on board. I don't value sleep enough, and that's something I have to confront every day and look in the mirror more often, I think.
Well, yeah, we all tell you that you're constantly too tired, but it doesn't matter what we think.
I always get my work done, and that's the main thing.
Well, it's questionable. He also congratulates Dale on his recent wedding, and he hopes that married life is treating him well. I'll let Dale answer that himself in the future.
I mean, he's looking a lot more tired.
So. Is he?
No.
What's he up to?
I don't know.
What are you saying he's doing?
Staying up too late.
Awful bastard you are.
What?
Number three.
Hello. Maybe I'll read this one in bed tonight.
I'd love myself. Fall asleep to some IGN UK feedback.
Says, hi all, my name is Jesse and I'm from Dayton, Ohio.
Wow. Hello.
So that's not Jesse that's on the podcast. It is Jesse from Dayton, Ohio.
Where is Ohio?
Ohio is pretty much bang in the middle, isn't it?
Is it? Super middle.
I'm pretty sure. Maybe I'm wrong. I might be. Anyway, it's a long time listener, first time caller.
Hello.
So, don't know if this was some sort of text-to-speech situation.
That would be quite good. We should have that. Another podcast I was on used to have a voicemail inbox.
Well, I was recently listening to, the first 10 episodes of this podcast for Podcast 500 to get clips. They had a bit where they set up a voicemail messenger and had people leave questions.
It was a mixed bag. Yeah, but it would be funny.
Yeah, it would be. It's a lot of trust you're placing in people.
Let's consider that.
Maybe we will. Anyway. Been a huge fan of podcasts for years, and it's always getting better. Losing Greg Miller and Gav was upsetting, but IGN somehow found people just as funny.
Wow.
Just as funny as Gav, can you imagine?
I know, it's incredible.
I know. And Greg Miller, never actually met him, but...
It's kind of funny.
Yeah. See what you've done there.
Mm-hmm.
See what you've done there. It says, looking at you, Matt Scoville, and you, Mr. Scrabbles.
Hello.
On an equal plane. How's that make you feel?
Huh?
You and Max in the same sentence.
And successing Gav.
Yep.
Succeeding Gav.
Succeed.
This is all this fucking script business. I'm trying to find new words for words I don't need to get rid of.
I know you don't like the nice stuff, but I'm going to carry on. You guys never cease to entertain, which makes work... Ah! I'm not well.
You fucking are.
You guys never cease to entertain, which makes work much more manageable. So a huge thank you to all you guys who make it happen.
I like helping people manage work.
Anyway... His question is about books, specifically novelizations.
Okay.
Here we go. Control has become one of my favourite games. It's moody, haunting, and just sticks with me long after I put down the controller. I would agree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very good game.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't hurt that my mum wanted to name me Jesse Dillon, which I found incredibly creepy during a particular cutscene.
Oh, yeah.
I've had this with a game. So I thought it was like reading my data on my computer. So I'd gone home.
Yeah.
If you go around that house, there's a portrait. And it says, Mum and Dad, Terry and Janet. Those are my parents' names.
That's cool.
And it's really creepy. And it turns out the parents in that game are the same name as mine. And they're not two overly common names either.
No.
Especially combined.
I'd say they're both more, maybe not Janet, actually. I was thinking they're both more American-y names.
Yeah. But I remember asking someone else who's playing, like, are they the same names in your game? Like, yeah, I was like, okay, that's just a really weird coincidence.
What I'd love is that you went in and went, you seen that thing where Gone Home knows your mum's name?
Well, I don't know if it had, like, somehow connected to Facebook or something. I was like, because I'd heard a lot of things about the game, and I was like, I'd ignored it because I just wanted to experience it with myself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is it doing something weird, like Kojima-esque?
So good.
But no, it's just coincidence. Anyway. It's twisting hallways. This is Control again now. Twisting hallways and cavernous rooms draw me in, and places like the Ashtray Maze and the Black Rock Quarry make me want to see more of the oldest house.
Oh yes,
the Ashtray Maze in particular is brilliant. I also really enjoyed Alan Wake and Quantum Break novels by Rick Burroughs and Cam Rogers respectively.
I did not know they were things.
There you go. It was wonderful getting to explore these worlds and characters in more detail and depth. My question is, do you think we'll get a Control novel? Also, what other novelizations, game, movie, and TV did you love and connect with? And which were utter shite? Stay awesome and keep killing it.
I don't think... Also, thank you, you're nice. I don't think Control would get a novelization just because it kind of defeats their own narrative. Like, we've met them and talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
And their narrative plan for this thing is the idea that the story of Control is designed as this idea that you're getting a peek into one particular moment in a much, much wider history.
Yep.
So they want to build out the idea of what that history is over time. So I could see a novelization that's a different bit of the Oldest House, like what you want, seeing more of that history. But I can't see a novelization of the game.
I also think, just because unlike Quantum Break and Alan Wake, Control is much more grounded and based in other books.
Yes.
And it borrows a lot from other novels. So writing a book of Control would be, you'd just be writing a new weird fiction book.
I mean, Alan Wake is in a way just Twilight Zone and Twin Peaks. And
but yeah, that's a TV, you know, they're not making a TV show of Alan Wake yet.
No, I mean, the way that Alan Wake is structured, it almost is a TV show. But I think the thing is for me is sort of like, I think Alan Wake can work as a novel because of the way it works. And so, like, it's a novelist in a novel. There's kind of a nice sort of loop there. For me, Control is much more about the... I know that it you discover things about the Oldest House in the same way that Alan Wake might find the pages of the books around that world. But I think it's that sense of discovery that you can't get if you are being led through by a protagonist in a pre-written thing. So, like, I like doing it myself, and there's a sense of the unknown about that I think does lend it so well to the medium of video games, whereas, you know, Quantum Break is far more narrative led I think, and so therefore does suit a book.
I've never read a novelization of a video game or a film. I don't know why, just because I think I tend to watch or play things in their first instance.
I did some reading around Magic the Gathering novelizations when I was a cooler guy in my youth. And I think that works much more for me just because that's built kind of like the Control thing. That's building around a world that's only hinted at in the game you play. So it's this idea of, like, do you want more? Here's how you get more.
Yeah.
Whereas I've never been particularly interested in the idea of, like, reading something that I can already see in its original form.
The closest I've got is reading some of the short Overwatch stories and graphic novel versions of those. But that's more extra. That's not that's not the same story being told in book form.
That's similar. Content. So the important thing with, like, Magic is, yes, it is a card game, but actually Magic is a setting.
Yeah.
In the same way, yes, Overwatch is the game, but those stories are built out of the setting of Overwatch. And, like, you know, my example would be is Warhammer, be that Age of Sigmar or 40,000. They're not tabletop games. They are actually a setting, and there is a tabletop game that is set in that. Like, those novels are as much as the hobby. You know, you can be into Warhammer and only read those novels, and that doesn't make you any less of a hobbyist. So those are where those are interested. But I think I probably sit in the same way that, like, when I was a kid, I used to buy, like, well, my mum would buy me the novelization of films that I'd seen, because they used to get, like, the Toy Story novelization, or
yeah,
I can remember, I'm fairly sure I had the Small Soldiers novelization.
That's probably better than that film, probably, to be honest.
whoa.
I like Joe Dante as much as the next guy, but it's not a great film.
It's not a Gremlins, is it?
No, but I like it. I've heard the God of War novelization is meant to be very good.
It's by his dad.
Exactly, it's run by Corey Barlow's dad, which is sweet.
Yeah, it's lovely.
The Halo ones are supposed to be very good, but again, that is expanding the Halo universe rather than just being about those games.
They made a thing that I thought was a joke for a while, but they did, in the run-up to Halo 5, a serial-style investigative podcast set in the world of Halo. And it was fronted by a journalist played by Keegan-Michael Key.
What?
Which was very strange, but actually was really good.
What, like, were they investigating?
It was basically, like, what had happened on this planet, and it was tangentially related to why Master Chief had disappeared at the start of the game. But I started listening, I was like, oh, this is a funny little thing, and then got really hooked and listened to, like, 10 episodes. I think I wrote about it for Kotaku at the time. I was just like, this is fucking weird. Like, this is the strangest way to do an ARG, get a comedian in to play a serious role.
If you've got any good novelizations of games or films,
yeah,
even some that are maybe better than the source,
I'd love to
let us know.
Oh, if you want to know a shiter, we got sent the novelization of Men in Black International, and I read a few pages and went, fuck me, it's somehow worse than that terrible film.
We also got sent one for The Division 2.
Did we?
Yeah,
I bet that's all right though.
It's probably just like
a just Tom Clancy novel, isn't it? Yeah, the Men in Black International one is also, and I am stealing a friend's joke here, so thank you, John Logblythe, but it's written by a guy called R.S. Belcher, which is funny by itself, but it also, it sounds like R.S. Belcher.
Yeah, it's very good.
Apologise to Mr. Yes. Belcher, or Mrs. Belcher.
IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com if you want to let us know about novelizations.
But that's all for now.
Yes.
I don't want to hear anything else from either of you two except goodbyes.
Well, how about we play a bit of music from that Star Wars trailer?
Oh, yes.
That's a lovely way to see out the
day. Is that available clean?
We'll get it from the trailer.
Yes.
You might hear one sentence of dialogue.
Or maybe a laser beam.
Oh, hello.
I love the sound of a laser beam. Right, we're going to go.
Goodbye.
Enjoy yourselves.
Bye.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that. As well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.